So here's a blueprint for living fun fact. Would you believe that every fifth fish caught in the world is caught illegally? Now, the result of that is growing conflict, the increasing use of military force to protect what sea-bordered countries see as critical national assets. It's not going to get any better. Global fish stocks are diminishing. The fight for this resource will only intensify, and well, that might lead you to ask what can be done. And on two fronts. First, to protect this finite resource, and second, to prevent potentially military escalation of this conflict. Here to discuss this is Johan Bergenas. He's Senior Director of Public Policy at technology company Vulcan. Johan, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Now, there are comparisons in this rather vexed situation between the world's reliance on both seafood and oil. Explain that to us.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. The premise of that line of thinking is, of course, that oil is a very conflict-ridden sector. I believe that there are some numbers that says that 25 to 50% of all conflicts is in one way or the other driven by the lack or access to oil. And so I wanted to look at what are the characteristics that drives that and how is it relevant to fish? And I think there are some overlap. You know, there's a concentrated supply. The Middle East has nearly half of the world's recoverable crude. Similarly, the Central Pacific has 60% of the world's tuna, which is a highly pursued commodity. So that concentration of supply is one area that will drive conflict and has driven conflict with these commodities. Another very interesting note here is that this is a critical commodity for the human condition. We know that 33% of all energy is produced from oil, and 1 billion people today rely on seafood for their primary source of protein. So these are some of the overlaps that we have looked at, and there are many more, that leaves us with the conclusion that unless we do something dramatic about how we think about the oceans and the riches that they hold, we're going to be in trouble.
Because we're well used to, you know, the shorthand that wars are being fought over oil. That's been a commonplace now through the previous century and this. But we get to the point where perhaps war might be fought over protein. That's a real twist in human relations.
Well, it is and it isn't. Think about the last 10,000 years. One of the most common sources of conflict has not necessarily been over territory or ideology. It's been over access to natural resources. And we have fought wars over agricultural lands, spices, sugar, and a wide range of other more natural resource-related objects. So why not fish when it's so important? It will continue to rise as an important commodity as the population around the world continues to grow.
And the points of tension between, you know, national stakes are really difficult to define. I mean, we're talking about areas of water. We're talking about moving populations of fish within those areas of water, establishing ownership of both those waters and the fish within them is a really difficult thing, you know, to put down in black and white.
You are absolutely right. And another component of this is, of course, that fish are transnational in nature. They move back and forth in territory. So that's number one. Number two, it is very, very difficult to surveil and enforce vast areas of water where fishing boats, relatively small vessels, are perusing the deep land at their leisure, catching fish that they shouldn't.
And fishing boats are sort of the thin end of national interest in a lot of areas of the world.
That's exactly right. And the Chinese, they have perfected a strategy where they use fishing vessels as the U.S. Defense Department called them, the third arm of their Navy. They are sending out these vessels to not only pursue resources, but project power and set an example in disputed waters. And when someone, a different country, then attacks these fishing vessels or are trying to exert their rights of the water, the Chinese are sending in their Coast Guard and their Navy to protect them. And that gives them an excuse to be where they shouldn't. And this has happened in the South China Sea. And unless we are careful, there's an example being set here for this type of behavior around the world.
And these points of conflict are only exacerbated when you bring in another element, and that element is shortage of the resource. So is that marine protein resource, or as we may more commonly know them, fish, decline? Well, thus will those conflicts be exaggerated? Will they deepen?
In a sense, it's hard to wrap your head around this. In a sense, it's not. We have been fighting over scarce resources pretty much since the beginning of mankind. And so when we are seeing growing populations, scarcer fish resources, and more competition, there is very few outcomes that are good in that scenario.
Chuck into that as well another element, and that's global warming. So that is going to also put a flame under this pot.
That's exactly right. And there are things like fish who are in need of colder waters. They will move around the oceans. And then, of course, the increased algae blooms, the decrease in coral reefs, the increase at acidification will have very critical impact on where fish are at, what countries will have access to fish. Countries might use entire stocks that they had been reliant on for food, for work, and for cultural and other historical values. And that's going to be a big change for many nations who are dependent on these resources.
Well, that's a very good point, that cultural point, because, you know, in big industrial countries and societies where fishing is, yes, one among a number of industries, but many places, the whole social fabric of the place is bound up in fishing, in the exploitation of the ocean, in the use of this marine resource. That's a really deep impact if that suddenly goes away.
You're absolutely right. And I was fortunate over the last couple of months to visit some of these big ocean nations, as we call them, like Palau and others in the Pacific. And spending some time with our colleagues there and friends, you can see and understand that fishing and reliance on the ocean is part of their fabric as a culture and what it means to be a human being. And as we are seeing these big industrial fleets coming into their exclusive economic zone and pillaging their waters, it's personal to them and it's personal to who they are as a nation.
An interesting, you know, inversion in that. I mean, the more reliant you are on the sea, both culturally and in terms of resource, probably the smaller you are and the less chips you have to play in this big country fight over protein, over marine resource.
You're absolutely right. This is an unfair fight. Big industrial nations who have had the capacity to support their domestic and international fishing fleets have now been being able to claim and access some of these fishing waters. And bigger nations and hungry nations like China and others, they will continue to use both military and diplomatic and economic power to gain access to waterways and territory that are fish right. And smaller, poorer countries are going to have an enormous amount of pressure on them to not only keep these countries out, but also enforce and go after violators.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because this is not an area in which international law has not intruded. There are many, many treaties which should govern operations within this area. Is the problem around enforcement, or is the problem around the terms of those treaties and arrangements?
There are about 70 or more treaties, laws, and regulations that governs the oceans. And so it's not a shortage of the rule of law necessarily. It's what you're saying, it's a matter of enforcement. Every country has the exclusive economic zones or rights to its natural resources in those waters. A radar reaches about 12 nautical miles out from their territory, if they even could afford or manage a radar on the coast. A fishing boat might be traveling at 12 to 15 knots. They will take them a couple of days to get out at the broader outskirts of their exclusive economic zones where the illegal fishing boats are. So what we are up against here over the next number of years, hopefully, is a global and sophisticated capacity building initiative that will help not only poorer countries, but richer as well, to have a better understanding of what is out there beyond the line of sight.
Are international bodies seeing this for what it is, or the bigger players in this seeing this for what it is, or do players, perhaps like Australia, perhaps like China, see this as an extension of national strategic interest rather than national resource interest? Is there a blurring of that thinking?
You mentioned two countries that are taking, you know, waters and natural resources in the ocean very seriously. But let me give you a different data point. The sustainable development goals and the commitments that are being made to those on a financial point of view, among the lowest committed resources are oceans and ocean sustainability. And I think it has to do with, it is hard to fully understand what is happening above and under the surface, because it's hard to connect with. Other environmental and economic and conflict issues hits a little bit more close to home. This is a brewing and very dangerous pattern that we're seeing, and we really need to find ways very, very quickly to do more about it.
Yes, well, quickly is always an interesting challenge geopolitically.
Yeah, you bet.
The points of conflict currently, I mean, how does that, it's not a hot war as we would know it with gunboats and battleships, but how does that small-scale conflict manifest?
Well, sometimes it escalates to that type of conflict where shots are fired and engagements are having been taken. So I mentioned the South China Sea. Indonesia has been blowing up 300 fishing vessels over the last number of years. Mm-hmm. Other engagements of military-style capacity has happened in Africa, in South America. And of course, there was an engagement not at the level of people shooting at each other, but in the English Canal during the summer, where French and English fishermen were fighting over and trying to scuttle each other, if I remember correctly, over the scallops in the English Canal. So while we don't see major armadas or navies lining up around the exclusive economic zones to go to battle over fish yet, we are seeing what could be the precursor to that type of engagement.
Well, you say yet. I mean, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, Johan, a billion people dependent on seafood for their protein. This, as population increases, as that resource has more pressure applied to it, I mean, those possibilities of conflict will increasingly occur.
Let me give you an example that I try to use to illustrate what could be happening and what may actually happen. If Canada or Mexico were to send their people or their security forces into the United States to steal our oil or steal our wood or steal our gems and other natural resources, that would be an act of war. And I believe our government would probably respond in kind. Hmm. What we are seeing out on the oceans, I think, is the precursor to that, where countries are starting to see the dynamics that you're mentioning, rising population growth, increased need for this resource to sustain societies. And they, by extension, they are going to use their hard military means to protect it and their soft economic and other diplomatic means. So we got our work cut out for us here over the next decade or so.
Johan, it's a really interesting perspective, and thank you so much for sharing and explaining.
I appreciate the time. Take care.
Johan Bergenaas, he's Senior Director of Public Policy at Vulcan. And Vulcan, a business founded by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, who, yes, sadly passed away, and this week just passed. This is Blueprint here on RN.